Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Well, it's a huge win for Keir Starmer. It's an historic loss for Rishi Sunak, and an utterly changed political landscape faces Britain this morning after a seismic general election. But is this a loveless landslide for Labour, representing a major punishment of the Conservative Party rather than a swing to the left? One of the big winners in all of this is Nigel Farage, who became an MP on his eighth attempt and whose Reform UK party enjoyed an unprecedented surge in the polls. Let's have a listen to how it all played out, starting first with the incoming Prime Minister.
We did it! You campaigned for it, you fought for it, you voted for it, and now it has arrived. Change begins now.
And a more downbeat Rishi Sunak took responsibility for the Tories' resounding loss.
The British people have delivered a sobering verdict tonight. There is much to learn and reflect on, and I take responsibility for the loss. To the many good, hard-working Conservative candidates who lost tonight, despite their tireless efforts, their local records of delivery, and their dedication to their communities, I am sorry.
Well, the newly elected MP for Clacton, Nigel Farage, says he now has the Labour Party firmly in his sights.
What is interesting is there's no enthusiasm for Labour, there's no enthusiasm for Starmer whatsoever. In fact, about half of the vote is simply an anti-Conservative vote. This Labour government will be in trouble very, very quickly. And we will now be targeting Labour votes. We're coming for Labour, be in no doubt about that.
All right, well, let's begin now by getting an overview of what's been happening overnight. And we start in Northern Ireland with our reporter Una Kelly, who has been covering the results all night from the Count Centre in Maharafelt. Una, thank you for staying up and still being with us this morning after 10 o'clock. Give us the overall picture of the results.
Yes, Claire, the final result in the 18 constituencies came through in Maharafelt there just around 2 hours ago. So here's the shakedown of the seats. Sinn Féin holding steady on 7 seats. The DUP lost 3 and are now reduced to 5. SDLP holding on 2. 1 seat for Alliance, UUP and TUV, and 1 seat for Independent Unionist Alex Easton. Now, the big story that no one saw coming was Aidan Paisley losing his seat. When those rumours started coming through the Count Centre, that was shocking. It's considered a safe seat. A majority of 13,000 for Aidan Paisley, and a long history there. Paisley has held that seat for 54 years, but no more. He lost by 450 votes to hardline unionist Jim Allister. And Aidan Paisley, who normally loves the spotlight, refused to take questions from reporters at the Count Centre, no matter how hard we were trying. While Jim Allister, on the other hand, more than happy to expound on what he called the brazen falsehoods the DUP told about their deal on post-Brexit trading arrangements. Those were his words. So this was a disaster of a night for the DUP. Lagan Valley, the seat of former leader Geoffrey Donaldson, was taken by Alliance's Saoirse Eastwood. They lost South Antrim to the UUP's Robin Swan. The one bright spot was party leader Gavin Robinson holding on to his seat in East Belfast. If he'd lost that, it would have been an absolute unmitigated disaster for the party. But even in the seats that the DUP won, it was much tighter than most expected. Sammy Wilson's majority in East Antrim significantly reduced, and East Derry, which was considered a safe seat for Gregory Campbell, in the end came down to just 179 votes. Sinn Féin's Kathleen McGuirk ran him very close there. The other big story of the night in the north, Sinn Féin has now scored the hat trick of being the largest party at local level in Stormont and at Westminster level. Mary Lee MacDonald and Michelle O'Neill were in jubilant form all night at Maharafelt Count Centre. If we look at Fermanagh South Tyrone, for example, the UK's most marginal seat held by just 57 votes, while newcomer to Sinn Féin Pat Cullen increased that majority to more than 4,000 votes. And even in seats that Sinn Féin weren't expected to win, like Foyle and East Derry, they made substantial progress. SDLP leader Colm Eastwood holds on to his seat in Foyle, but with a significantly reduced majority. He's blaming low turnout for that. Claire Hanna retains South Belfast for the SDLP. Now, Alliance did fail in its targets of North Down and East Belfast, passed, but it did make the historic gain in Lagan Valley. And the UUP is back at the House of Commons after a seven-year absence. Robin Swan had switched constituencies and even stepped down as health minister to run in South Antrim. That strategy worked, and he'll be swapping the blue benches of Stormont for the green benches of Westminster.
All right, Una, thank you very much for that overview, and we'll have more analysis on all of those results from Northern Ireland as we go through the morning. Let's go to Philip Boucher-Hayes in London now. Philip, good morning to you, and can you bring us an overview and the latest on the results there, please?
Claire, it began in the rain. It is ending in the rain for Rishi Sunak. 119 right now, 122 projected when the last five seats are counted. The worst result for the Tories in over 100 years. 12 cabinet ministers have lost their seats at all elections in the modern era. Last night, 12 current and former Tory cabinet ministers lost theirs in just the one night. Former Prime Minister Liz Truss slow hand clapped until she agreed to join candidates on the platform to hear the news of her defeat. Jacob Rees-Mogg, the former Minister for Brexit Opportunities, beaten by 5,000 votes. Defence Secretary Grant Chapps blaming his loss on the party's failure to deliver anything other than soap opera. So, yes, a landslide for Labour. 411 seats right now, projected 412 by the time everything is done and dusted. But you were absolutely right at the top of the programme. A loveless landslide. They have done this on a lower share of the vote than Jeremy Corbyn achieved in 2019. And this is because in two-thirds of the 249 seats that the Conservatives lost, they would have held them if it wasn't for the presence of Nigel Farage's reform splitting the vote. Not that it is going to have been a happy night for Nigel Farage. The talk in Westminster this morning is that leading a party of just four MPs for the next 5 years against a government with 412 seats is Nigel Farage's idea of a worst possible nightmare. So Keir Starmer's majority is in this 1997 Blair territory numerically, but that is not where Britain is at in its head. In just 2010, there were 45 food banks when David Cameron's Tories came to power. Now there are 3,000 of them. And this was Tory policy, to shrink the state, to have the big society step in. I went to a food bank this morning, only in a cruel twist of fate to find out that it had been closed for the elections. And the woman who arrived just before me, I saw her crumple, bow her head and just turn and walk away. Now, she didn't want to talk to me, but this man did. And he is typical of nearly every single conversation that I have had here in London in the course of the last 2 days. Informed, angry about what is going on, but without faith that much is going to change now.
What do you think of that election result?
I didn't actually see it.
You're just waking up to the news now, are you? Okay, well, Labour won in a landslide.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge fan.
Why not?
I'm not a fan of any politician because they all promise things that they never deliver. I think Jeremy Corbyn was the closest thing we had to a real leader who could have taken the country in a slightly different direction. But everybody else for the last, well, since Thatcher or before Thatcher, has just been tearing this country to shreds. When you look at all of the options that we have, they're all the same.
All right, that's a voter reacting to the results of the election this morning and speaking to RT's Philip Boucher-Hayes. Well, let's speak to Kevin Maguire now, Associate Editor with the Daily Mirror. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning.
So we have the numerical success, as Philip put it there. But when you look at the share, this is Keir Starmer on shakier ground than he might have liked.
Yeah, he'll look at the painting the country red, turning it from blue in terms of the House of Commons, Parliament. Absolutely, that's a stunning result. Elections are won on how you organise, and he's managed to do that in the constituencies. But right, the projected share of the vote is around 34%. That might be the lowest winning share for a majority this side of the Second World War. Certainly no majorities are usually produced on that figure, and it's because the opposition is split on the right between the Conservative Party and Reform UK. He'll get something of an early honeymoon. I expect most people will wish him well, but he'll have to build on that very quickly, otherwise it will just vanish.
Mm-hmm. How concerned are you to hear Nigel Farage now saying that his target is Labour? That's where his attention turns.
You would expect him to say that. Of course, he was the leader of UKIP, which got 3.9 million votes in 2015. He's got about 200,000 more than that, although he's got four MPs this time. Didn't work out that way last time. I think there's a lot of talk there. I think he's a problem for Labour, but he's a bigger threat to the Conservative Party. And if the right in British politics remains split, which it looks like it will at the moment, then Keir Starmer and Labour can keep winning on a smaller share of the vote. Starmer has to deliver. He has to show progress in people's living standards, that they are and begin to feel better off. And he also has to begin to fix public services, which are in a very poor state in the UK. We know with a near record waiting list in the NHS, criminal justice breaking down, roads full of potholes. I could go on and on about that. But the rhetoric of broken Britain, which he's used during this general election and has struck a chord with people, he's probably not left himself with the levers to fix it very quickly. He's bet the ranch, he's bet number 10 Downing Street on economic growth. Well, that would take some time to come through if it's achievable and to get the tax revenues to fix the services. So he's made it all about delivery. He won't be marking his own homework when it gets to the next election. It'll be the voters doing that, and what voters give they can take away.
Now, Rishi Sunak is expected to make a statement very shortly, certainly before 11 o'clock, because he's on the way, isn't he, to the palace to formally resign as Prime Minister. Are you hearing whether he's going to resign as Conservative Party leader? There was some talk yesterday that he might be asked to stay on until September.
No, that remains unclear. I don't know if he's made up his own mind on that, because in a way the Conservative Party needs a period of reflection. If it was a very small Labour majority and there was a prospect of an effective opposition or another election pretty soon, you could see the case you have to rush this. But when they had this thumping, the worst result in their history, you could see they would need some time to decide what they're going to do, never mind who will replace him. Because the fact is they've got to decide whether they go towards Farage and court him or they head back towards the centre. That's a fundamental decision. It's all about the soul of the Conservative Party. I'm speaking to you from Matthew Parker Street, 400 metres from Parliament. It's where the Conservative HQ is. I've just seen Richard Holden, the Tory party chair, who carpet-bagged to a new seat, held it by just 20 votes. He's normally chatty. I looked at him and he just looked away. He was absolutely smashed, as white as a ghost. I think if they rush into a new leadership battle, it'll be the wrong time to make the wrong decision. But Rishi Sunak himself, the problem he has is his authority must be gone. Mm-hmm. After maybe a caretaker leader would be better, somebody who would see them through.
Because they've lost some of the people who might have fancied a tilt at it, including Penny Mordaunt, who's gone.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Penny Mordaunt has certainly gone. Lost with good grace, I thought. But you could have somebody like David Davis, who ran for the leadership against David Cameron. You could go for Jeremy Hunt, the Chancellor, who was pipped by Boris Johnson. It may be the case, and I don't know. The one Tory MP I've spoken to this morning was speculating himself. It may be Sunak goes, they get somebody else in just as an interim who will not take the job, but just so they can have this 6 months of reflection.
Yeah, just to
and
take
decide
a breath.
Where they go.
All right, Kevin, good to talk to you. Thank you very much for joining us. Kevin Maguire there, Associate Editor with the Daily Mirror. Now, shortly before coming on air, I spoke to Andrew Pearce, who's Consultant Editor and Columnist with the Daily Mail, and I began by asking him to characterise the extraordinary results.
It's an historic win for Labour. It's an extraordinary victory. The Conservative Party has been annihilated. I'm not surprised. They fought a useless, hopeless campaign. But what is significant in the Tory losses, David Cameron's old constituency, former Prime Minister, has gone. Liz Truss, the former Prime Minister, hugely, that's probably the most significant defeat of the evening. She's lost. Boris Johnson's old constituency has fallen, and so has Theresa May. So there you have four former Tory Prime Ministers' constituencies have all disappeared in this landslide. The Liberal Democrats winning most of those seats, but it's a huge huge victory for Sir Keir Starmer. That is the real result tonight. He's, if you think since the Second World War, Clem Attlee won a general election, what was a Labour leader who won a general election. Then you go to Harold Wilson, Tony Blair. He's only the fourth Labour leader to win a general election since 2005. And it's the biggest win since Blair in 1997. So good luck to him. It's not, as you probably know, probably not the party I would tend to support, but the country wasn't listening to the Tory party anymore. They'd had 14 years in power, and frankly, they'd thrown away the last few.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about why the electorate seemed to be turning a deaf ear to the Tories. Nadine Dorries on Channel 4 last night said David Cameron and Boris Johnson, they'd always had an eye to the right. And she claims that's something that Rishi Sunak had failed to do. Do you think that is the biggest issue, perhaps borne out by the vote that we saw for reform?
Well, reform, one of the big stories, Nigel Farage's reform, have done very well. They've got four seats. But if the polls are accurate, we're still crunching the numbers, but there's some suggestion that they're on about 3 million votes. Well, that's fewer than Nigel Farage's UKIP got in 2015 when they got 3.9 million votes. But I think the real problem for the Tories was not about David Cameron and Boris Johnson. It was the Liz Truss mini-budget. That's when the Conservative Party surrendered their reputation for economic competence. The mini-budget she brought in was a disaster. It spooked the markets. Interest rates started to soar. And lots of people in England, Wales, Scotland, their fixed-term mortgages, which they took out in 2019, are ending. And they're getting a really unpleasant shock when the mortgages are doubling. That was one of the biggest problems. The other factor is 14 years, time for a change. Mm-hmm. He couldn't counter that argument. And let's be honest, it was a campaign with some very serious missteps. He will never be forgiven by many voters, especially older voters, walking away from the D-Day commemorations early. I'm still stunned that he thought that was the appropriate thing to do. And he did that. And that would have impacted most of all older voters who traditionally vote Conservative.
But we're still focused on it being an anti-Conservative vote rather than a
pro-Labour
vote, because interestingly, Nigel Farage said that there's no enthusiasm for Labour, no enthusiasm for Keir Starmer. Do you agree with him?
I do, because you've got to look at Labour's share of the vote. So this is the biggest landslide win since 1997, only just shy of Tony Blair's numbers. But the share of the vote, about 37%. Jeremy Corbyn, when he lost in 2017 as the Labour leader, had a 40% share of the vote. So there is no great love for Keir Starmer. He is not the telegenic, charismatic young Tony Blair who swept to power on such a wave of optimism in 1997. He won because he put together a competent campaign. He's managerial. He managed to convince the electorate that he changed the party from the extremism of Corbyn. But the real factor was a massive anti-Tory vote. And if you add up reform share of the vote with the Conservative share of the vote, reform on around 15%, Tories on around 22%, that comes to 37%. If Nigel Farage hadn't stood, this election result might have been very, very much closer.
Mm-hmm. Now, Alistair Campbell saying last night, do not underestimate Keir Starmer, saying that people hadn't given him enough credit. But you have an eye on his deputy leader, Angela Rayner. You reckon she has plans?
Well, I wrote a mischievous piece in the Mail this week pointing out there are already four domains that have been set up in her name: Angela for PM, Rayner for PM. She's a very ambitious woman. She will be the first woman deputy prime minister of this country. She is the elected deputy leader of the Labour Party. So even if Sir Keir Starmer wanted to sack her, and he doesn't, he couldn't. So she's a very ambitious woman. And you always have to look over your shoulder in these elections, even when victory is it's Starmer's moment. And I wouldn't want to do anything to take away from that. There are people waiting in the wings because his popularity will turn at some point. Mm-hmm. And I think, you see, part of the problem I think the Labour government will have, they've boxed themselves in very tightly on tax. They've pledged that they can't raise this tax, they can't raise that tax. So will they really turn around the NHS, which is in a very sick place, very quickly? Probably not. So there are big problems storing up, and the small boats are going to be still flooding across the English Channel. So Starmer's, I predict that Starmer's popularity will turn very quickly because he's not that popular already.
Rishi Sunak, there were reports yesterday as the vote was happening that there were a group of powerful people within the Tories, although where they are today, God only knows, who had asked him to stay on until September to avoid a civil war. Now, that hardly seems relevant, but what do you think will happen when it comes to the leadership of the Conservatives?
Well, some of the big, big beasts have gone. So Penny Mordaunt was my favourite to become the next leader. She was the leader of the Commons. She was the one people will remember wielding the ceremonial sword with such aplomb at the coronation. She's gone. There's Grant Shapps, who is the Defence Secretary, he's gone. So I think if Rishi Sunak, I think, will want to do the right thing. He did the wrong thing in going for an early general election because it was the wrong decision. He should have waited until October or November when Nigel Farage would have been in the United States working closely with Donald Trump on his campaign. But I think they will want him to stay and hold the fort for now. That's what happened in 2005 when Michael Howard lost, when the Tories went down to their third defeat at the hands of Tony Blair. He hung on until October, from May to October, which gave the Tories time to regroup, and they came up with David Cameron as the leader of the Conservative Party. So I think Rishi will want to do the right thing. If you're going to ask me who's going to be the next leader, haven't a clue.
Right.
Kemi Badenoch, who survives, will be a contender. But there are people telling me they might go to an older, more experienced MP, somebody like Sir David Davis, who was the Brexit Secretary. He's already 75, saw off reform in his constituency, to be a stopgap leader.
Yes.
While the party can rebuild, rethink and repair its wounds.
All right, Andrew, we'll leave it there for now, but we will be talking to you again when the dust settles on all of this about your very personal book, Finding Margaret, hopefully next week. So we look forward to
that chat. I'm looking forward to it.
Great,
looking
Andrew.
Forward to it very much.
Thank you so
Good
much.
Good to talk to you. Bye-bye.